Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show, The Big Show, the most critically acclaimed and important podcast that is recorded in our car. And actually, today it's in our truck. We're in the big white studio. And it's a Sunday, and it's a beautiful day, and we're going out and doing something outside. One of the things that Spice and I, we come from a background where our friends are gamers of various different descriptions. Some of them actually play the role-playing game. Some of them are war gamers. Some of them are video gamers. But, you know, we tend to hang out with people who game a lot. And one of the things that I've been noticing about my gaming friends, other than, of course, the fact that they really need to not be spending beautiful summer days hunched over a gaming table and should be out doing something, getting a little exercise, other than that,
yeah,
is that I see the stuff that they talk about, and it's interesting because they're very smart people, it's humorous. And then I go on to, like, a prepping forum or listening to preppers or podcasts or stuff like that, and I realize how similar a lot of preppers' outlooks toward prepping are to gaming scenarios.
At least the vocal online preppers.
Right, at least the online preppers. Yeah, not there. Obviously,
more than one population out there.
People out there who are all hat, no cattle preppers is who I talk about. Yeah. Hey, I like gaming. I enjoy gaming in a sense. I'm a war gamer. But prepping isn't a game. You can have fun with it. You can make games out of aspects of it to challenge yourself. But prepping itself is not a game. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
In games, theories work.
I'm sorry?
Theories work in games.
Right, in games, yes.
There are predictable rules. The amount of chaos is limited.
We hope. Unless you're playing chaos. Okay, she was playing. We went to a gaming convention yesterday. We go to one a year. We spend one day doing it a year. I go and meet with my historical war gaming friends. And, like, yesterday morning, I fought a Civil War battle reenactment, an actual reenactment of an actual Civil War battle that happened in North Missouri. It was a very historically accurate game, and we basically fought it out on the tabletop, and then, you know, it's an amusing way to spend a morning. Last night, I got into a game that is kind of a home-brewed game of Chariots. And my charioteer alter ego, Salticus, not his real name, but it's close enough for this, Salticus, took out the victory. And that's fine, that's good, and this stuff. But the tactics that I used in this game were game tactics. They would not have worked in a real chariot race. And the problem isn't that you play a game. It's when you try and use unrealistic game tactics as a way to base what you're doing. I mean, yeah. I would never actually do that stuff in real life.
You can never really have as much faith in your assumptions in real life as you can have in the gaming world.
Right.
Because the gaming world does have rules. And real life, while it has rules, we don't know all of them. And some of them can change without much warning.
Right. Well, here's an example. In a game that she was involved in, there were regular troops, and there was a commissar. And in truth, she mentioned something that it was perfectly the safest way to, or the best way to be safe around a commissar is to be out in front of that person doing brave and stupid things. In real life, the bravest people doing the stupidest things were the safest from the Soviet commissars. Sometimes life does imitate art, and art does actually imitate life. So if you look at the movie Enemy at the Gate, it shows a perfect example of this. The Soviet troops were forced to attack a strong enemy position in Stalingrad. Some of them didn't even have guns. This is true. Sometimes the Soviets did actually send troops into combat without guns, saying, well, they'll be available here shortly.
Yeah. You just pick one up after somebody else drops it when you get shot. No problem.
Yeah. And they actually did set up machine guns behind the troops to encourage people to not turn around and run. I know that's debated, but I have it from a very good source that it's true. So, it's kind of hard to explain what I'm trying to say. I know what I'm trying to say. It's kind of hard to explain. Well, we're going to get a train.
So, yeah, we are. Getting trains is good. So, maybe give some examples of the kinds of assumptions you see online preppers making that you don't think would hold up, or things that you think are unrealistic.
Okay.
I know I've got a
perfect example. We had this game, and this game was taking place in North Missouri. There was a battle site called Athens, depends on where you're from, how you pronounce it. And we know how many people were casualties at Athens. We know exactly how the battle went. We can line up the troops on both sides. We can load up the Quaker gun. They actually did use a Quaker gun at Athens.
A Quaker gun.
Very, 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 very early skirmish in the Civil War, like one of the very first ones. And a Quaker gun is a cannon made out of a tree log. Hollowed out and bound with metal straps. And, you know, they generally blow up and kill everybody if you try and use them. So, you know, not a good idea. So we know that. And we can war game that. But reality was entirely different. The numbers don't show what reality was like. Athens was a mosquito-infested, miserable experience for the people involved. People wearing heavy-duty, winter-type clothing in the summer.
Made out of wool.
Well, some of it was.
Yeah.
This was very early. There were not a whole lot of uniforms around there. The Union troops from Iowa were wearing old uniforms. The ones that kind of shot a few shots across the river and claimed they won the battle.
The Iowa troops didn't actually cross into Missouri to fight. They just stood on their side of the river and
took some pot shots
at the Confederates they could see.
And then once the Missourians ran off the home guard, which was the Confederate force, the Iowa federal troops came in and, we won! In case you're wondering. But, you know, it was a miserable experience. People died and people got blown apart in horrible ways and lives were shattered. In a game, you know, okay, the little plastic guy gets knocked over. We don't care about the plastic guy's two-week-old plastic daughter. We don't care about the grieving plastic wife. We don't care. It's unrealistic.
We don't even melt the little guy's plastic leg off.
That's right. In the chariot game, a guy got drugged behind a chariot. We were laughing. He died eventually. And then he started having parts of him fall off. which was funny. I know it's a little sick.
In a game.
In a game, it was hilarious. In reality, it would not have been nearly so funny. Unless there's something really wrong with you.
In a real-life situation, I can't think of any actually really, really good outcome when you're forced to fire a weapon at another human being. I mean, even if your objectives are successfully met, I understand the military likes to rephrase things in ways like that. And they're doing it in a quite intentional way to depersonalize it and to try and remove the emotions from it. Because the emotions are hard on human beings. People who are not psychopaths have some trouble when they kill other human beings.
Heck, the military actually has put out some of these games. The Army put out a really good first-person shooter, you know, because that's what they do. And I'll use, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, don't play video games or whatever. I don't care what you do. I do not care. You play whatever you want to play. As long as it doesn't actually physically hurt another person that doesn't want to be hurt, I don't care what you do. But you get into some of these first-person shooter games, and you realize that now some of these high-end guns that you can, you know, gain access to, you get access to like EOTech optics and some of these other optics, you get access. Those are not product placements. But the products in the shooter do not work like real. Because in the shooter, you know, you hit your guy, he explodes, he dies, whatever. You know, that's fine in a game. But I think far too many people assume that's what real life would be just like. And that's a real problem. You know, I know a lot of people who consider themselves to have a great deal of tactical experience because they've played a lot of first-person shooters. Well, that ain't it. That ain't it. It just is not it.
Even the kind of things people do at the range where they, like, the three-gun competitions are a great way to train some firearm skills. And they look like a lot of fun, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
But I can't imagine confusing that with being prepared for actual fighting of other human beings, because those targets are not shooting back at me. They're not screaming when I hit them. I'm not full of adrenaline. I have some adrenaline when I'm blowing up lots of innocent little paper targets at high speed, because it's fun. But it's nothing like the kind of adrenaline shot I would get if I were in a life-threatening experience. I've been in life-threatening experiences, and there's a whole another feel of unreality to it when you get that much adrenaline running around. So it's, I think people's planning doesn't necessarily account for the realities of the situation. Even a minor gunshot wound, if you don't have top-notch medical care, is a nasty, ugly, life-threatening kind of problem. It's not a TV show where you get hit with a round in the shoulder and you're fine the next week.
We come back to the Civil War. We have to come back to the Civil War. And how many of those wounds were not that serious? They weren't even battlefield wounds. You cut yourself on a fence post, or, you know, you cut yourself in the hand using, well, cooking what meager supper you have. But because you are tired, because you are weakened by other types of diseases like dysentery and whatever, because you are not, your immune system's already horribly challenged, what would normally be, in today's world, a minor cut, you know, that if it gets infected, you could just drop a little bit of antibiotic on it and you're good, killed a lot of people. People do not realize that most of the people who died in the Civil War died of disease. And it wasn't even close.
Yeah, you hear those one-day totals of those terrible battles, hundreds of thousands of people dying in 2 or 3 days. And then you think, as horrible as that was, the number killed in battle was less than half of the number actually killed in the war.
It's staggering. But yet, we don't game how many deaths we get in a Civil War hospital. That's not what we focus on. As a prepper, you game how, you know, oh, I got to get these firearms because that one gives me the best chance to blah, blah, blah. Instead of, okay, what am I going to do for antibiotics? What am I going to have on hand for dysentery? I cut myself really bad. Have I got bleeding control? Not only do I have it, but is it where I can get to it? You know?
What happens when my primary source of water filtration fails? Because if you, in the games that, you know, try and be realistic, like some of the role-playing games where I play, you have to think about providing yourself with food and water along the way. But those means of providing food and water, if you had the foresight to think of them in the first place, they never fail. You don't get mice tearing up your storage and spilling stuff all over the place. You don't have your filter that you got to filter your water have the filter suddenly pop out on you. And whoopsie, now you've got contaminated water on both sides of the filter. What are we going to do about that?
It's a good question. If you don't know, you need to find out. Yeah. This is exactly what I mean. You know, when you game something, even if you're gaming it in your own mind, it's not the same. So I guess the takeaway I'm going for here is when you're doing things like gaming, just realize it is what it is. It is not a replacement for careful, considered thought about the reality of the situation.
And some real-life practice. Obviously, none of us are going to go out and practice some of the things we prep for, because we don't want to live that way, frankly. But some level of practice in using the things you have bought to be preps will help show you where the fail points are, and they'll show you the kinds of things that can happen. And they give you a sense of reality about it. Yeah, you've got this nifty little tent, and you set it up at night, and you sleep on it at night, and then you get up to go in the morning, but it dewed overnight, and now your tent's wet. So you're going to pack it up, carry it heavy, and risk it molding? Or are you going to do something else with it? No, tiny little thing that you would never get from a video game type scenario. Or even watching Survivor. You may notice they show the horrible
Yeah, it's fine. I was just chuckling.
I didn't even see it. A friend of mine was talking about it, and the friend was outraged because the friend is a camper. And she was reporting that she was watching this show, and guy set up his shelter in the pouring rain, and he finally got his shelter set up, and he did a really good job with it, and he had a really nice shelter, but he had to set it up in the pouring rain. But somehow when he got up in the morning, his clothes were magically completely dry. Woohoo!
Wow.
I've been on camper trips, and that's not how it goes when you set your camp up in the rain. Everything you own is wet.
Period.
Feels like forever, yeah.
Until that sun comes out.
Or it molds away to non-existence.
You know, and here's another thing, you know, people don't think about. You have, say for example, cotton clothing. If you have to wear your cotton clothing a lot in the weather, it will rot. It will rot off of you. Do you ever see people walking around in these video games or these movies or whatever with rotten off clothing? Well, zombies, yeah. But just something to keep in mind, you know. It's when you're wet and you're out on one of these trips and you're wet and you're cold. It's miserable. It's absolutely miserable. But
do you have materials and the skills to take in your clothing if you start losing weight?
Yeah. Do you, and also, do you have redundancy on your key stuff? In a normal scenario, people say, oh, I've got this in my bug-out bag, and I've got that in my bug-out bag. Yeah, but what happens if that fails? Well, I've got 7 different knives.
Yeah. You see the pictures of what some people are putting in their bug-out bags, and they've got a whole cutlery department in there.
Yeah,
and one pair of socks.
I think, personally, the largest... what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say opponent, but the largest challenge to good prepping is testosterone. And I'm saying this as a guy. That is the biggest challenge to being a good prepper, is learning how to chill out the testosterone.
May I add an addendum? It's also a driver for prepping, a useful driver for prepping.
To a point.
Yeah, to a point. Because it, you know, a lot of guys do feel strongly invested in being able to take care of themselves and being able to take care of their family, and I'm 100% behind at that. Absolutely. I also think women should feel similarly, and many of us do. But I'm all for it that guys do. And I think it's more common in guys in part because, you know, that's how they're wired, and it's their hormones that help them get wired that way.
Right.
But too much of it, and you get to focusing too much on the...
testosterone stuff.
Yeah.
The knives, the guns, the combat. You know, oh, I need to be prepared to freak out and kill everybody in sight because that's how you have to be to survive. No. There have been a lot of people. This world's old. It's been around for a long time. And throughout the history of civilization, you really there's very few situations where you have to kill everybody to survive. It just really is not a common
most type of the thing. Time, the people who've been most successful are those who form a strong community that's mutually interdependent. They support each other, and they help each other get through the difficult times, and that is what has worked historically.
It's truth. I hate to admit it, but it's true. So, anyway, we're not... we've talked about doing a article and podcast on game theory, and this is not that article or podcast.
Yeah, no.
So maybe I ought to title this one "The Anti-Game Theory." Well, I was just struck yesterday. People were talking when we were going through these games, and people were talking about what it was really like versus what the games are like. The games are clean. The games, when somebody gets killed, it's like, oh, well, goodbye, little plastic piece. That's not how it happens.
The games are set up to be, to some extent, fair.
Yes.
And life is not. I heard the shocked disgust in one person's voice. Somebody was describing a new game system to him. And in many of these games, different kinds of troops are assigned different points. So you can, based on, you know, things that are more effective, cost more points. So both sides can start with an even number of points in an effort to make the game more fair. And this guy was outraged that this game system didn't have anything like that. Because clearly, some forces that somebody could decide to bring would completely outmatch and overwhelm the forces that the other side decided to bring. And it's like, yeah, that's just how it is. If you show up with this and I show up with that, you're going to win and I'm going to lose, and there's not anything I can do about it. Life ain't fair. I've noticed that.
I actually do a gaming scenario. I haven't run it in several years, but it's with little bitty tanks. They call them micro armor. I have a scenario that is 1973 Arab-Israeli war in the Golan Heights, and I will tell you, there was absolutely nothing fair about that fight in the Golan Heights. The technology difference that the Israelis had was astronomical. But the Syrians had a whole lot of tanks. They didn't have very good tanks, but they had a whole lot of them. So, you know, it turns out to be a quality versus quantity thing. And there's really no winner or loser because, you know, everybody knows the Syrians just don't have what it takes to beat the Israelis in that situation. They just can't do it. So the winning and losing scenarios was, okay, how many can you kill before you die? Because, you know, but in my scenario, the Syrians just keep getting endless tanks because they just keep coming and coming and coming. They had thousands of the things. And the Israelis had a very limited number. So, and we all know what happened. Anywho, that's just an example of, yeah, it wasn't fair. It wasn't a fair fight. It never was a fair fight. There's nothing fair about Pearl Harbor. The Americans had no chance of winning Pearl Harbor given the situation that they had, unnoticed, unmodified. So, there we are. Anything else to add?
It's not what you know about that's likely to get you. It's what you don't necessarily know about. So remember that your assumptions are not necessarily the way the world really is.
Right. And to put my little spin on what you just said, it's not what you know about that you think are going to kill you. It's what or that's going to get you. It's what you think you know that just doesn't turn out to be true that will get you. You know, those assumptions. You know what they say about assumptions. This is a G-rated program, so we can't say it here. But anyway, I am Salty.
I'm Spice.
And I am out.